Welcome to the special edition of Political Rewind. We are live this afternoon at the Georgia State Capitol. We're here on the second floor of the building, just really kind of outside the Lieutenant Governor's office. Governor's office is across the hall. And we came down here today because Governor Deal has now given his final State of the State speech and sort of began to talk about his agenda, although Jim Galloway, you're with us, lead political writer for the AJC, and Greg Bluestein, political reporter, will talk about the speech. I would put it this way. He had a lot of comments that are worth our looking at, but didn't lay out his agenda the way we thought maybe he would.
No, it's typically governors are required in State of the State speeches to pick a metaphor and torture it for about 45 minutes.
He succeeded admirably, but he did it well.
But usually the victim is the ship of state. You know, it's either leaky or tossed upon, you got stormy shores. This time it was kind of the tree of life.
Yeah, growing trees.
The old man who plants a tree with the prospect of never seeing, you know, knowing that his grandchildren might sit in the shade, and in a way it was a wistful speech in that way, and kind of appropriate because Governor Deal is 75 years old. He'll be 76 when he leaves office next year, which makes him one of our older governors. I mean, and many of the changes that he is putting in place right now, he won't see the benefit of.
Yeah, Greg, I think wistful is a great word for the speech. He did recount some of the accomplishments that he's proudest of, and we'll get into those. But it was also a very emotional speech. You've covered the governor much more closely, certainly than I have. He got very choked up a couple times during the speech.
Even before the speech started, he's an emotional man, and this was an emotional incident. And this instance, this was his final State of the State speech, his eighth and final one. And even as he was walking down that center aisle in the House chamber, you could see him starting to choke up. When he brought up his wife, Sandra Deal, he started to choke up. When he brought up some of his biggest accomplishments, he started to choke up. Even when he started talking about his senior staff, he started to choke up. So he was fighting back tears throughout this entire speech.
As long as you've got the mic right now, Greg, was there any one moment, was there any one idea that he expressed that caught your attention? What will you write about for tomorrow?
So in his speech, he makes a joke about the I-85 bridge collapse happening the last time he addressed lawmakers on Sinai last year. He joked that lawmakers shouldn't set any fires this year. I think that might have been his mission statement. He said, just keep going along. No big, huge, sweeping agenda items. Don't sort of, ruffle feathers too much. No big tax reform, no big criminal justice changes. Just keep on doing what he started, which is using his metaphor, planting that seed and letting it grow.
Yeah, and of course, one of the reasons this sort of what you just said about him suggesting not to light any fires, it kind of echoes what he has now said to the other candidate, to the candidates who are running to replace him for governor. He's cautioned them that they should be careful about trying to run by attacking his agenda, because he's prepared to fight back.
Well, that is aimed at Democrats, Stacey Evans and Stacey Abrams, but it's also aimed at the likes of Michael Williams, who may be running on a doom and gloom, all is corrupt here campaign.
What struck you in the speech today? Is there a couple of moments that you are going to write about?
Well, I'm not sure that I'm going to write about it. I just thought the sweetest moment was when he brought up his wife, Sandra Deal, and all the work she had done, going to to visit 800 schools, I think, is what he said, and the time that an elementary school kid wrote back and said, thank you, Sandra Deal, for visiting our school, and thank you for running the state.
Let's do this. He did, in fact, talk about some of his accomplishments. And the first major accomplishment, what he wanted to make sure that legislators and all the rest of us paying attention to this speech noticed, was how he has worked to build the economy of Georgia. Let's listen.
7 years ago, Georgia's unemployment rate stood at 10.4%. Since then, we have created roughly 675,000 new private sector jobs, and our unemployment rate is at its lowest level in over 10 years at just 4.3%. And it bears my saying one more time. On top of all that, we've been named the number one state in which to do business for the fifth consecutive year. Just this past fiscal year alone, the Georgia Department of Economic Development's Global Commerce team helped to generate some $6.33 billion in capital investment here in Georgia. That outstanding growth is a result of 377 expansions and locations that cover every region of our state. You know, many people think that economic development projects only happen in the metropolitan Atlanta region. But in fact, 80% of those in fiscal year 2017 took place outside of the metro Atlanta region. Our dedication is to the whole state, and the results of our top-ranked Department of Economic Development bear that out.
Governor Deal talking about the economy and how he's watched it and shepherded its growth over the course of his 7 years so far in office. Greg Bluestein, Jim Galloway are with me. We're also right now joined, thankfully, by the Lieutenant Governor of Georgia, Casey Cagle. Thank you for being with us, Governor.
Well, Bill, it's great to be with you guys, and thank you very much for extending the invitation to visit, talk a little bit about the governor's speech along with what's going on in the legislature.
Tell me, and we'll give Greg and Jim a chance to jump in, but the governor hands off. You're, of course, running for governor yourself this year. The governor paints a very positive picture of the growth, the economy in Georgia today. Is he handing over to whoever follows him a state that is in good shape financially?
Absolutely. There's no question. I mean, I think what the governor talked about today in his speech was articulating what he has been steadfast in, and that is making Georgia the number one state to be do business in. But he also articulated his commitment to rural Georgia, and I think that that's very, very important. He talked about workforce development, which I totally agree, and he's got a great record to run on and to talk about and a legacy to leave, and obviously it's about building upon what that legacy looks like going forward. And is there more work to be done? There's always more work to be done, but in terms of what he has accomplished and you know, the tribute to his wife, the fact that he, you know, very much used the parable to talk about, you know, planting the tree and not for himself, but for generations to come. He has done that, and he has done it beautifully, and he is obviously, it's been an honor for me to be a wonderful partner with him in helping make that become a reality.
Mr. Kegel, if I could. This is likely to be a backlash year in November for Republicans as a whole across the nation. Just it's just the dynamics of the White House kind of dictate that. Do you think that Deal has been able to establish the Republican brand in Georgia to an extent that it creates this separation between D.C. and Georgia that kind of shelters Republicans this year?
So, I mean, obviously, I think, you know, I think there's a lot of rhetoric and talk that is around this narrative that wants to be set that it potentially is going to be bad for Republicans. I will tell you that Governor Deal's approval ratings, and as Bill articulated, I'm running for governor, and so we poll quite extensively, and not that I put a lot of weight in that, but everyone needs to understand this is an extremely popular governor, okay? Mm-hmm. Not just in a Republican primary, but in the general election as well. And you look at the issues by which he has taken on, and the legacy issues, particularly around criminal justice reform, that is widely respected on both sides of the aisle. So, you know, he is someone who definitely, you know, has a big tent, if you please, and certainly we believe we do as well.
We talked about this a little earlier, but usually these State of the State speeches are as much about looking forward to the policy initiatives and less about looking back. This was a little bit more of the legacy initiatives that have sort of defined Governor Deal's tenure. Were you surprised that he didn't lay out his agenda over his final year in office?
Well, you are right, I think. What I would say to you is I think Governor Deal was able to do a little look back, but it was in the context of the path that has been laid to go forward. And he talked about the workforce component, what he's going to be doing around that. And it is an evolution, right? I mean, it is a continuation of the things that he has been doing. I think we're going to have some major issues going forward this legislative session. And I think he's going to continue to be a great leader and very steady in that hand of leadership.
Governor, the Senate Judiciary Committee passed out the House Adoption Bill 159.
Correct.
For a floor vote maybe sometime next week.
Uh-huh.
They added some language to it.
Right.
I have called that a poison pill. You have politely disagreed. Tell me why I'm wrong.
Let's make sure our listeners, we've been talking about this, as you know, on the show, Jim. Real quick, we know that the adoption bill was a contentious measure at the end of last session because in the Senate there were additions to the bill that would make it difficult for gay and lesbian couples to adopt. That bill created some significant controversy between you and the House. You've now said you want a clean bill without that language about gay and lesbian couples. But what Jim Galloway refers to, of course, is there's additional language in there that may in fact complicate matters, and he wonders if where you stand, I think, on really getting that bill through.
The Governor Deal vetoed similar language last year.
Yeah, right. So let me be very clear. I'm in favor of the adoption bill, number one, in the interim, there was extensive work that was done by the Senate, and the Judiciary Committee, along with others, vetted this, and all stakeholders vetted it. And I think the changes by which were made to the adoption bill are very favorable, and they're good changes. And we could go into that if you would like. The additional bill that has been added to the adoption bill is what's commonly referred to as House Bill 359. Specifically, this is a bill that obviously has been a Senate priority now for 4 years. It is certainly pertaining to child welfare, and adoption is long term. Of course, this is a short term, 1 year power of attorney that has the ability for a parent to be able to give to someone as a caregiver for that year. This is extremely important, and I believe that the governor is going to be supportive. I'm very hopeful that we're going to get him supportive of it. And I hope that the House will be as well. The House has obviously supported it, too. It is not a poison pill. It was never designed to be a poison pill. And I do take offense to the fact that, one would articulate.
Politely.
That one would articulate that it is a poison pill.
So let me go back, if I could, then, to another. We've already talked before you arrived here about the governor's line in which he said, let's not have set any fires, making a reference, of course, to the I-85 fire. But we interpreted it. And probably correctly, we think, to mean he's suggesting stay away from those hot button issues this session that can just bog us down, be problematic as we run it, face the election cycle with Amazon's bid, up in the air. When he talks about avoiding setting any fires, it's not hard to imagine he's talking about religious liberty. It's not inconceivable. You now on your side, Josh McCoon, has once again introduced in English as the official language measure. Do you agree with the governor, what we think the governor is saying, stay away from this kind of stuff this session?
Well, I mean, I think the governor's saying, keep the main thing the main thing. I mean, and I would say exactly the same. It is important that we tend to the business that is in front of us, that we have our priorities, and that those priorities are shaping the lives of Georgia citizens in a better way, okay, with public policy. And I think that's why the adoption bill is important. That's why I do believe that those individuals that may be in the military and they're being, having to leave their family, they need someone that's going to take care of that child. All of those things are critically important. And so, naturally, I mean, I think the governor in the Eggs and Issues talked about Amazon. We're excited about Amazon. But on the same token, it has to be a financial, process that we go through that demonstrates that we're not giving away the farm, okay, as we say.
Greg?
I want to ask about that. Again, the governor, as we know, said yesterday that there will be a special session if Georgia is one of the top finalists for Amazon and their second headquarters, which would be a $5 billion project. It will likely require huge incentives to get that project. What are the sort of upper limits in your mind of what should the Georgia offer? What should Georgia dangle to get a project like this?
Well, I think first and foremost, I mean, when you look at Georgia, we have a lot to sell that no one else does, okay? Namely, the busiest airport in the world. I mean, no one else in the country can offer Amazon a site that basically their front door is the ability to bring people from all over the world right to Amazon. And we do. And that is a huge calling card. And I think that distinguishes us. I think the low tax environment, the low regulatory environment, the tort system that we have that's fair and just, along with the workforce that we have put in place, all of those things, I believe, really does. And when you look at who we're competing against, I think that's the strong message that needs to go forward. Now, are there statutory, tax incentives that are out there that everyone, every company gets to participate in? Yes. All right. Now, where do you need to go over and above there? What communities are willing to step up and to obviously be a player or a partner in that? All of that has to be determined. And we don't want to get the cart before the horse. I mean, the sites have not been selected yet, okay? I mean, so there's a lot to be done and a lot of work that is left. And I think the governor sending a very strong signal that we are serious about getting Amazon. And we are going to do what is necessary, but in that, it's got to be weighed against a return on our investment, and everyone has to do
it. I apologize for interrupting you here. First of all, thank you. We asked you to give us a little bit of time. We've got to get to a break, but I wanted to thank you for being with us. We look forward to watching you throughout the legislative session and then to watch as your gubernatorial campaign unfolds. And so thanks for spending a little time with us on Political Rewind today.
Great to be with you, Bill.
Take care. Let's go to a break. We'll be right back.
Now is the perfect time to clean out the garage and get rid of that car you no longer need. You'll face the coming months with a fresh start, and by donating your used car to GPB, you'll even get a tax deduction. Call 877-GPB-1-CAR or donate securely online at gpb.org/cars. And thanks.
I'm gonna get in my car. Drive so far.
Welcome back to our special edition, a live edition of Political Rewind. We're down at the Georgia State Capitol, two-way street, of course, being preempted, because we wanted to get reaction to the governor's State of the State address. And now we're joined by Democratic State Senator Elena Parent. Thank you for spending a few minutes with us, Senator Parent.
Thanks for having me, Bill. It's always good to see you.
Simple starting point. What did you hear in the governor's speech today that pleased you? What did you hear that made you a little nervous?
Well, I do want to thank and congratulate Governor Deal for working very hard for his 8 years in office and for some really good things that he has advanced for our state. In particular, I want to congratulate him on all of his efforts on criminal justice reform, which has been a win-win and really a model for the country in many ways. And I do want to, of course, congratulate him for the work that he's done to put some more money into education. However, what's left unsaid is that we have not been fully funding our education budget, and really never have, and still aren't. So while we have put some more money back in from the deep hole that we were in as a state in terms of the Great Recession, where we significantly cut our education budget, we are still not back where we are, and it's my understanding that the teachers won't be seeing any raises this year.
Yeah, there was a lot of talk about that, of course, in the 2014 campaign, where Democratic candidate Jason Carter talked about spending more money on education, while Governor Deal talked about instead bringing more efficiency, rewriting the QBE funding formula that dictates how much schools get funding. What we haven't seen in his second term is any talk about actually doing that. What are your thoughts on what should have been done or what should be done this year on the on that school funding formula?
I think that we're still operating at a deficit, and I think that you should expect the current results that we have with the performance of our public schools, which still lag as far as when you look across the country. I think that's really not much of a surprise, given what we've put into them. I'm not suggesting that there aren't other things that we can do to improve education, and I certainly don't suggest that money is the only answer, because I don't believe that it is. But I don't think there's any doubt that we are not and have not fully funded our education system.
Senator, we just finished with Lieutenant Governor Casey Cagle, and of course you are a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, correct?
I am,
and,
yes.
And y'all just passed out the adoption bill with the addition of HB 359.
Correct.
He disagreed with my characterization of the addition. It doesn't have the religious liberty provision, but it does have something else. You raised some objections to that.
You called it a
I did.
You called it a poison pill.
No, I called it.
That's what I'm saying. You called
she
it
did.
A poison
she did.
Pill.
She did.
Galloway.
I don't want...
No, I think that playing games by attaching unrelated legislation that was previously vetoed by the governor just, a few months ago to a bill that attempts to help Georgia's kids find stable, loving homes, especially those in foster care and others, is pretty hard to defend.
Aside from the school funding issue, what did you not hear in Governor Deal's speech that you wanted to hear?
Well, even the Georgia Chamber at Eggs and Issues is highlighting very robustly our horrible rate of uninsured citizens. We still are really towards the bottom of the list. We all know that the best thing we could do to shore up our rural health care system, where we've got hospitals in distress and closing, cover our uninsured citizens. All that, by the way, plays into our ability to do economic development. Having a healthy population that can work and to combat the opioid epidemic would be to pursue a Georgia-specific Medicaid waiver to ensure our citizens. And that's what we should be doing. And I hope that we continue to have robust conversations about that this session, and that the state would do the right thing. We are spending a lot of time requesting money to, for example, deepen the Savannah Harbor. Here we would spend maybe $135 million for a $1 billion return, federal dollars. We've given up $8 billion in the year since the Affordable Care Act came into play. We would be jumping up and down with joy to cut that bargain if it were about the Savannah deal. And frankly, I think we've dithered around far too long and done a great disservice to rural Georgia.
Senator, we've talked before you joined us about the fact that I think we were all a little surprised that there wasn't a little bit more specificity about the agenda the governor plans to follow throughout this session. And one aspect of that for me is that in talking about the economic health of the state, from his point of view, we played a soundbite of that a minute ago, and he went out of his way to say that 80% of the fiscal year growth in terms of the locations that deal with global investment are in rural Georgia. But that's a very narrow way to approach what everybody this session seems to agree is a major issue that we have to start tackling, and that's revitalizing the rural economy. I was a little surprised that we didn't hear more from him about how his office wants to interact on that issue. Were you?
A little bit, especially with all of the time that's been spent discussing the rural broadband issue. It sort of was a big omission, if you will. But I got to go back to healthcare. Right now, everyone acknowledges that you can't do economic development in an area where hospitals are on the brink and closing. It's very difficult to attract these employers that the governor has been focused on. They're turning around and saying, what's the healthcare system? What's the school system? What's the infrastructure system?
Yeah,
and are they any good?
And Bill, to your point about the governor's speech, I think he was very careful in what he said. He said that economic initiatives in 2017
yes.
alone.
Yes.
80% were, but.
But I think he said not in Metro Atlanta.
We're not in Metro
which means
Atlanta.
They could be in Augusta or Macon.
Savannah,
rural
right.
or are they? Yeah.
Right. But clearly, I think he's I think he's ceding the broadband issue to the next governor. Whether it's Lieutenant Governor Casey Cagle has got some stuff in the works now. Of course, we've got Speaker Ralston with the House Rural Development Council. They're going after that one, and I think Brian Kemp, whose offices are right across the way from here, he is named broadband as one of his top issues. So I think that's going to be something for the young people to pursue.
Hot button issues. The governor, we talked about it a few minutes ago with Lieutenant Governor Cagle. Governor warning, don't set any fires. Among them, we talk about whether or not there's going to be an effort in your body, because it's Josh McCoon, of course, who's always been the real motivator behind this, another effort to pass a religious liberty bill. You have colleagues on, I think you and Mary Margaret Oliver, both very concerned about Confederate memorials, monuments, and what's going to happen to local jurisdictions getting some control over them. So these are things you want to see dealt with. Are they going to get, is this a session in which people are going to try to sweep those things under the rug to come out of here without too much controversy?
I would be surprised, gentlemen, if we did not have some discussion somewhere along the line about religious liberty.
Well, because some of the candidates, like a McCoon, are going to run on that.
Exactly.
All right,
completely avoiding the topic, I would be shocked if that were managed. Certainly there will be those who try to do exactly what you said, sweep it under the rug. But I would really caution, and I know that some on the other side of the aisle certainly agree with me, that any prolonged discussion on religious liberty could be fatal to this bid to attract the Amazon HQ2. So
we've heard Governor Deal and his administration say the same thing. And obviously we heard yesterday about the special session for Amazon. What are you looking for if Georgia gets to that point? What are you looking for in a package of incentives for Amazon?
I would love to see it jumpstart us on the transit side. I mean, they made that one of their requirements, as I recall, is that mm-hmm. we will not locate somewhere that doesn't have transit. Okay, so we qualify as having transit, but even in the counties where we have our heavy rail backbone already, the bus service, yes, it's there, but you will find it hard-pressed, and it's been highlighted in national press, how long it will take you if you live in like a Lithonia in DeKalb County, you know, one of the interior counties, to try to get to a job and even in the perimeter area or Roswell. And it's just not conducive.
Greg Bluestein asked the Lieutenant Governor a question that I thought he didn't give us the more specific answer. He talked about it, but he danced around one aspect of it. The governor said the other day, we are going to offer Amazon, the state is going to offer Amazon the single biggest incentive in our history to come here, putting the figure perhaps at upwards of $1 billion. Is that the right way to approach this thing? Is that how you'd
no,
want to see
no, I mean,
state?
Look, to me, you can absolutely reach the play. It's got to be a cost-benefit analysis, and you don't just sink billions in taxpayer money unless you're getting, like, an actual return that you can quantify and that you feel good about. And if that doesn't come to pass, then you shouldn't continue shoveling money in the hole. And if it means that we've put ourselves in, honestly, a deficit because we've shoveled out so much money and we can't do the things that we need to do to attract every other employer, like the robust transit network, the good schools, the health care, well, forget it. It's not worth the deal.
Let me ask. It's, the governor this week, of course, raised the prospect of a special session to address any Amazon needs that might arise if we make a list of finalists. Is there room here for a bipartisan, is there room for Democrats to play in this? I mean, do you think there will be enough Republican dissension about extending economic benefits to Amazon that you folks might be able to step in and take advantage of it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, certainly you're going to get into what's the deal with the corporate welfare. And then that opens up a broader discussion. And depending if it were to happen, how many Republicans are uncomfortable with that? Certainly those of us in the Democratic Party have our own thoughts and would be valuable contributors to that conversation.
And it sounds like mass transit funding might be a part of that concession package, right?
Listen, it's been how many years? MARTA has been the only system of its kind not to receive any real estate money, and there, you can see it in our network.
All right. We appreciate your stopping by, Senator Elena Perron.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always good to see
you. Well,
you
know, we especially like to have people who have been panelists on Political Rewind come by. So thank you for being with us. We'll watch this session unfold, and you should definitely come back and be a part of the our regular shows.
I would be honored to get to participate with you all again.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to a special edition of Political Rewind. We're live at the Georgia State Capitol. Let's take a break. We'll be right back.
On the next Fresh Air, Lena Waithe, creator of the Showtime series The Chi, set in the south side of Chicago. Last year, Waithe became the first African-American woman to win an Emmy for writing for a comedy series, for co-writing the Thanksgiving episode of Aziz Ansari's series Master of None, the episode in which Waithe's character comes out to her mother. It's based on Waithe's experience. Join us.
Fresh Air, this afternoon at 3, here on GPB.
Welcome back to Political Rewind, our special edition here at the Georgia State Capitol. Greg Bluestein, Jim Galloway are with us. We're expecting Speaker of the House David Ralston to join us in a minute. While we wait for him, a couple people have made reference to the criminal justice reform that has been a hallmark of Governor Deal's tenure as governor, something he's enormously proud of, and something that across party lines, you heard Elena Perron a minute ago praise him for it, that he's generally getting a lot of credit for. Let's listen to how he addressed that in the State of the State speech.
We're also doing what so many others thought impossible only a decade ago, and that is offering to those who have made mistakes but are willing to work hard to correct them a second chance through our accountability courts. The roots of this growing system have taken time to grow, having met obstacles in the soil along the way, but they have proven to be the most effective component of our overall criminal justice reforms. Individuals whose lives were once controlled by addictions are now able to reclaim forfeited potential, reconnect with their children, retain employment, and contribute as taxpaying citizens, and restore hope for a brighter tomorrow. If you do not think this makes a difference, I invite you, on behalf of all judges of accountability courts in this state, to attend one of their graduation ceremonies. You will find that your money has been well spent. From the time we first began our criminal justice reforms, the number of state-funded accountability court programs has increased from just 12 to 149. And I am happy to report that every one of our 49 judicial circuits now has at least one type of accountability court in operation.
Jim Galloway, criminal justice reform is certainly an issue that Nathan Deal staked out from the very beginning of his time in office. And as I said, as we introduced that soundbite, he gets enormous credit for having really taken this on in a progressive way.
Right, right. Well, in a progressive and a fiscally conservative
yes,
way, because
right.
because I mean, he approaches it from the point of view that it's a waste of human resources, and it's I mean it's to the point where you've got Congressman Doug Collins of Gainesville up in Washington trying to convey some of the reforms that Georgia has made and put them into the federal system.
Yeah. You know, Greg, I couldn't help but think as I heard him recount the things he's worked on, going back many years to sitting up there in the House chamber where State of State addresses are given. I remember the day that Zell Miller stood and gave a State of the State address as governor, in which he talked about three strikes and you're out, get tough on criminals. It's a new day.
Bill Clinton did as well.
Yeah.
Right? And this was not something that the governor really ran on back in 2010. But it's one of those proposals that he just took as his own right after getting elected. And it's been it's now almost an 8-part series of changes and overhauls that he started implementing way back when. And I think in year 8, even though he didn't outline it today, he said yesterday at Eggs and Issues that a constitutional amendment for a statewide business court, even though it doesn't have to do with criminal justice reform, it has to do with more judiciary overhaul, is probably his one of his final pieces of that legal overhaul.
But presumably, am I right? Presumably, if you have a special court for business matters, you free up courts to other courts to take on broader issues. You eliminate or you reduce a backlog on other kinds of cases. Is that right?
And the hope is you also, for the governor's office, you also help attract more businesses who want to come into a business-friendly state where they can hash out those disagreements in a more speedily way rather than going through the typical court system.
But I think, you know, if you had asked us 8 years ago to anticipate what Nathan Deal would do as governor, I think one of the last things you would have expected was this criminal justice reform. That is where I think he is truly kind of diverted from the standard Republican playbook.
Jim's right. Even if you look at his second term, the Opportunity School District, the school, you know, it was called the school takeover bill. That was something that was barely mentioned in his election campaign for a second term, and it became one of the biggest thrusts for a second term.
So let's talk about it. We're still waiting for David Ralston. I will tell our listeners what we saw. We saw the new mayor of Atlanta, Keisha Lance Bottoms, go up the stairs behind us, presumably to David Ralston's office, right as we were going on the air, and we imagine that
may be one reason he's
late. A little delayed because he's talking to the new mayor. You know, it's interesting in terms of the progression of this governor. In, I believe it was his first session, he worked hard to pass some restrictive immigration laws that gained him a lot. I mean, obviously, conservatives in the state were thrilled about what he did, but there was also a lot of controversy and criticism.
And Sam Olens pushed back on
exactly.
him as Attorney General.
Exactly. But the fact is, he hasn't governed throughout 7 years to the right and to his what might be his base in the way that it was reflected in those first things that he took on.
Yeah, you remember, I mean, at the start of last year's session, there was talk of a full-scale conservative revolt because at the end of the 16th session, he vetoed not just the religious liberty bill, but also the campus gun bill that was the heart and soul of a lot of conservative movement and activist groups out in throughout much of Georgia. So he managed to navigate those headwinds last year, ended up signing a campus gun bill, but it had huge exceptions and exemptions, and it's still something that critics still say is a terrible bill, but there are pretty big holes in it. And of course, he put the kibosh on any sort of revival of religious liberty throughout the rest of his term.
Jim, Greg mentioned it briefly, but it's worth exploring a little bit more. During his first time around, during the first term, Governor Deal said that one of the things he wanted to accomplish was the rewriting of the Quality Basic Education Act, which happened back in 1986, I think, under Governor Joe Frank Garris, earlier in that five, which created the funding formula that was supposed to equalize money to rural schools, smaller school districts, as well as the largest school districts. That hasn't worked, and he deferred it, presumably to his second term. He ran on it. And again, we're clearly not going to see it happen during his tenure. What's going on there?
This is the Gordian knot of Georgia politics, I think. I think if you have because at the root of it is that the state is drawing money from wealthy school systems and distributing it to those who don't have the property tax base that others, especially down in South Georgia, other parts of rural Georgia. And to rejigger that formula, you're going to have to be facing the power of the state, the political power of the state has shifted north, and it lies now in these Republican districts with great public school systems. And any attempt to take more money out of those school systems is really going to face some stiff opposition.
It's not only a Gordian knot, it's become a third rail in Georgia
it
politics.
It has. This has been something that has tripped up governors from both parties since it became law in the 80s. Democrats and Republicans have both been attacked for never, quote, fully funding through the formula's basis, education. So any opponents running against any sitting governor can say, you never fully funded education. That's why schools or graduation rates are slipping or these schools are struggling. And it's something that's such an enormous political lift. It takes so much political capital. I think Governor Deal, upon his second term, said, well, let's shift to Opportunity School District, which also ended up being an enormous lift that ended up not going his way.
I think rejiggering QBE, and I think that's going to be required of an initial first-term governor expending a whole lot of capital.
Wow.
And right now, there's no one in the current Republican field who does that. I'm not sure whether Stacey Abrams or Stacey Evans has addressed that yet.
No one. It is not a central part of any of the gubernatorial campaigns that I've heard.
All right. Speaking of a heavy lift, and we've now talked about it twice, this notion of a commitment of upwards of $1 billion in incentives to lure Amazon. Jim, it strikes me that, yes, asking it to the governor saying he wants to do it in a special session gives him a chance to not have to worry about it with all the other things he wants to accomplish and they want to accomplish in the regular session. But boy, in an election year, I'm assuming that there are some conservative members of this legislature who are going to face real challenges in whether they can support such an enormous investment.
It depends. If the decision by Amazon comes within the election cycle, and if Atlanta gets it, then all is forgiven. I mean, I think you could. I think you could pretty much spend anything. If Atlanta doesn't get it, and the package is revealed as that the governor was willing to offer this much, then yeah, I think you're going to have to see some pushback.
Wait, now let me. Okay, that's interesting because you've referred several times to Atlanta getting it. No, but that's important because it would certainly be somewhere in Metro Atlanta, which raises.
It will be someplace with transit, right?
Right, which is part of what my question is, Greg. If I'm a legislator in Cordele or Vidalia, I'm going to have to explain to my conservative constituents, why I was willing to put such a huge amount of money into a project up there in Atlanta. I get that Atlanta will love having it.
Which I think is exactly one of the reasons why Governor called for the special session, because why risk such a troublesome vote for some of these sitting lawmakers if Georgia never ends up becoming a finalist, and maybe the timing of the session ends up being in the summer after primaries, so that lawmakers don't have those gutty votes.
Right. The burden comes off after May.
Yeah. Also, I think $1 billion, by the way, from the analysts and lawmakers I've talked to, might just be the floor. I mean, some other states who have made their packages public are offering multi-billion-dollar incentives for a $5 billion project that would have 50,000 high-paying jobs.
And remember that this is the reason why rural Georgia is getting the attention it's getting this session right now, as it's kind of an acknowledgement that this section of the state has to be given something in order to feel like it's part of the game.
Okay, let's do this. Why don't we listen to one more sound bite from the governor's speech today? He talked about his commitment to improving and to putting more money into the state's technical colleges, pointing out that 30% of the people who graduate from Georgia high schools do not go to a college or university.
While we continue to support and expand the opportunities within our university system, I have also been pleased that in recent years we have added certificate and degree programs within our technical college system that provide a solution for the problems we faced coming out of the Great Recession. At the height of our unemployment rate, I ask the employers of this state, can you find proper candidates here in Georgia for the open positions in your company? Their answer was often a very loud no. So we created a program known as the HOPE Career Grant that covers 100% of tuition for technical college students who enroll in one of our Georgia strategic industry high demand fields. Now, although this program is only a few years old, it is already bearing exceptional fruit. In fact, of those students who take advantage of this resource, 99.2% find employment upon the completion of their training and studies. That is why I was proud to grow that forest of potential by adding 5 new categories to that incredibly successful program. So, as of 10 days ago, we now have 17 specific fields that allow our employers to answer yes when I ask them if they can find qualified candidates for open jobs.
Welcome back. That was another soundbite from Governor Nathan Deal's State of the State speech today. We've had this great suspense, Greg Bluestein and Jim Galloway sitting here. We know the speaker has been very kind to agree to come down here. And we also know he's a busy man. So we've been sitting here saying, let's hope that he comes. And Speaker of the House David Ralston is now at our microphone. Thank you for taking a few minutes with us.
Thank you, Bill. It's good to be with you. I didn't know they were going to be here, or I might not have come.
So. Okay, so just an off-point question. Did we see the new mayor of Atlanta walking up the steps to visit with you a few minutes ago?
You did.
How did that go?
We had a great visit. I think we share many of the same goals. I had a great working relationship with Mayor Reed, and much of that obviously based on the fact that he had served in the General Assembly. Mayor Bottoms does not have that experience, so it gave me a chance to get to know her and her to get to know me, and we had a good visit.
So what did you think about that? You gave a beautiful introduction to the governor this morning.
Well, thank you.
And it he was emotional, but you kind of
it was very heartfelt, your remarks, in a way that sometimes we don't quite, we're sometimes skeptical, but you made it clear this came from your heart.
Well, I thought it was important today, since this was his final State of the State, that it gave me a chance to sort of say a few things about the job that he has done, the kind of man I know him to be, and I've known him for probably 40 years, maybe a little more. He has been an exceptional governor in my view. I'm not as good a historian as Galloway, but
you put him up there with Sanders and with Zell Miller.
I did, and I think those were two great governors, certainly that left a great legacy here in the state. And And I think we're going to look back on the Deal administration as being on a level with governors like that. And so I just thought it was important to talk about that. And it was a great State of the State. It was you could sense in the room a lot of appreciation for the job he's done, a lot of love for his family, particularly the First Lady. This is a very, very popular, energetic First Lady that has really reflected well on our state.
Greg?
You and the governor have forged a united front on so many issues, but two of the biggest, the adoption bill and religious liberty. Tell me about how that evolved over the years.
Well, we didn't plan it, certainly. I think we share a lot of the same goals in terms of economic development and bringing jobs to Georgia and keeping Georgia on a winning path. And so when you have those goals together, then you kind of end up, I guess, in the on the same side of some issues. And we did. And, you know, we never really strategized about getting to the same place together. It just kind of ended up that way.
This was in many ways a valedictory speech for the governor. He looked back. Jim Galloway called it earlier in the show wistful, and in some ways it was. It did not lay out an agenda in a particularly specific way for the session ahead. But are you aware of what the governor is planning to? Have you two talked about what he wants his agenda to be, or is he still playing that close to the vest?
Well, I think we have talked, but I think it's most appropriate that I let him lay out his agenda rather than I.
We just want to make sure it's not a mystery to you, too, Mr. Speaker.
Oh, no. No, and I don't think there's going to be much in the agenda that will come as a surprise in that it would be a departure from the course that he has been on. I think one of the things that I'm very, very supportive of was the announcement he made at Eggs and Issues yesterday to wait and see after we become a finalist for the second headquarters for Amazon, then take up any legislative action that would be required to help them make a final decision. I applaud that because I think that takes away sort of the throwing darts at the dartboard kind of approach this session, and lets us focus in a very intense way when we are a finalist. And notice I'm saying that we will be.
I'm hearing that. Jim, you have time for one quick question.
Okay,
so
to clarify, this means that they're really, we won't see in the budget any specific spending for the Amazon bid. That would all come in a special session. Is that correct?
That's my understanding, yes. And that's what I would support.
Speaker Ralston, again, I know how busy you are and the fact that you were able to get down here and spend a couple minutes with us. We appreciate it. We are looking forward to watching the session unfold and watching your leadership. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Bill. Good to be with y'all.
We're about out of time for this special edition of Political Rewind. We're live at the Georgia State Capitol with Speaker Ralston, with Greg Bluestein, and Jim Galloway. Galloway will be back with me tomorrow. We have another special edition of the show from the studios. The superintendent of the Atlanta Public Schools, Maria Karstarfin, is going to come in. We're going to talk about local public issues that she deals with. How has she helped rescue Atlanta's public schools from the scandal it was engulfed in before she got here? But we'll also talk to her about what she's seen out of the Trump administration, out of Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, that's had an impact on not just her school system, but on school systems across the country. So we'll address that tomorrow on the show. We'll also have your colleague Jim Marine Downey, who is the education columnist, writer for the AJC, and we look forward to having her here.
And it'll be at 2 o'clock.
It will. Jim Galloway just must have realized that we got a note passed to us by our producer, Tom Faust, reminding you all out there that starting tomorrow, we will be on the air at 2 o'clock for Political Rewind. So you can join us Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 2. We're doing that so Galloway can get out a little ahead of rush hour every Friday afternoon. Thanks you all for being here for this special edition of the show. We will see you tomorrow.